Raf Epstein.
This week's Changing Track is for Gillian. I was driving myself home one night after another romantic disaster. In my mid-30s, and behind me lay a line of failed relationships. Hunters and collectors, I came to call them. Blokes who pursued me avidly. Then, once they were sure of me, started having affairs and or withdrawing affection. An unfortunate addiction of mine. Meet someone new. Convince myself this man was different. He hadn't succeeded in the past for good reasons. We are right for one another. My first doomed romance was in 1970. Rick was tall, dark and handsome. He strode around campus in the full regalia of the Monash Labour Club. Beard, combat fatigues, long hair flowing under a Che Guevara-style beret. We would stop the war in Vietnam, lift up the working class, and I could burn my bra at the same time. Perhaps I should have felt a penny drop when he expected me to pay half of the food and rent on our damp little bedsit, despite me having no income and he was salaried. A bigger wake-up call came when I got pneumonia. Rick told me it was just a cold. Doctors were too expensive. At last he discovered that hospital emergency rooms offered free treatment. Raised as an atheist, my next two romances were with men who'd recently left Catholic religious orders. I was impressed by their self-sacrifice, their spirituality, their good deeds. But the pattern emerged. On again, off again, affection. The lapsed Jesuit asked for a break so we could date others. Next, a former Salesian brother who began a series of affairs. He confessed and then expected instant absolution so he could be guilt-free. My first husband, Graham, was an artist. For 3 years, we built our own beautiful countryside house, lifting limestone blocks, using a hammer to rough-face them, carrying them, mixing the mortar by hand. Slowly, so slowly, our house grew. I earned more than he did, and we lived from pay to pay. He spent much of his money on art supplies. We both believed that one day the world would recognize his artistic genius. And then his affairs emerged. I confronted him. He said he was sick and tired of building this bloody house of mine, and he went off with his latest. Saddled with sexually transmitted debt, I eschewed romance for quite a while. But one day, I literally bumped into the former Jesuit. For the past decade, he'd been unable to commit to a woman. I was the love of his life. I won't bore you with any more details, but you can guess how it ended. So here I was on that night in 1985, once more driving home alone, making my tearful way through suburban streets. I realised this. Counselling had given me exquisite insight into my self-destructive habit, but it had utterly failed to change my behaviour. The pain of the latest rejection and my self-criticism made a burning ball in my chest and gut. Hot tears blurred the oncoming headlights. An inner fascist chanted at me that I was unlovable, ugly, and a hopeless moron. "Shut up, shut up, shut up," I sobbed. The fascist grinned and chanted louder. In a last-ditch attempt to drown him out, I switched on the radio. Suddenly, amid the loud chorus of self-blame, a small, cold voice said quietly but clearly, "I will never let any man treat me like that again." And that voice felt nothing like the passionate declarations along the same lines that I'd made in the past. It sounded like it could be the truth. Perhaps I had finally overdosed on charming bastards. Perhaps the band struck such a chord because I identified with their name. Unaided, I hadn't been able to drown out the fascist, but somehow their song helped me to succeed. The opening chords, that rhythm and those lyrics were a summons not to just walk, but to stride, even dance, to dance through whatever life may bring. Ideally, my moment of awakening should have come from a feminist song by Helen Reddy or Nancy Sinatra, but they don't spark in me a desire to dance. Blokey or not, this track is a celebration of love and life. I've never forgotten the dip in Glen Iris Road, where that joyful song and my cool inner voice came together. Although I was too bruised and raw to entirely trust it at the time, it turned out to be my moment on the road to Damascus. Recently, Ron, my loving and funny husband of 33 years, purchased a small smart speaker for our kitchen to listen to something other than climate change, wars, famines, bushfires and plagues while we cook and cleared up. This is the first song I asked it to play. Ron watched, amused and slightly bemused, as his 71-year-old wife pranced and bopped her way from cupboard to benchtop, brandishing the grater and a cutting board to the tune of Dire Straits and The Walk of Life.